once it's started, please.
The conference is now being recorded. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Denise. Barry, would you like a quick roll call just on who we've got this evening?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Very good afternoon, good evening, everyone. On today's call, we have Mike O'Connor, James Bladel, Barry Cobb. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Konings, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I sent out a spreadsheet yesterday sometime, kind of the next stab of our research. I'm hoping everybody got it. Margie, I didn't include you on the distribution list, so I'm hoping Marika maybe forwarded it over to you. If not, maybe Marika, if you can.
I was just in the process of doing it.
Okay, thank you. My apologies. So there's quite a bit of data there in the spreadsheet. I've got about six or seven kind of bullet points or disclaimers to talk about before we kind of dive into what we see there or take any questions on it. So if you'll give me about 5 minutes, I'll run through these real quick. Hopefully they'll alleviate any either questions or concerns you might have about what we see right before us now. Excuse me. All right, first and foremost, taking a look at the overall matrix, if you will, there's approximately 20 or 21 registrars that are loaded in there, and I just wanted to talk about how those registrars were chosen. From our previous call, we had said after we had reviewed the first take of the data that you know, we needed the top five, five from the middle, and five from the end in terms of ranking by number of number of domains registered. When I started taking a look at that list, if we went to the extreme bottom five, you know, those registrars that are accredited had less than 1,000 domains, or in terms of percent of market share, they weren't even getting up onto the radar. So, I took a look at the overall list, as you guys are probably much more familiar with. And so after running some quick numbers, basically the top 16 registrars make up 75% of the marketplace, or approximately 78 million domains. And the number of registrars, according to that list, that are greater in ranking than 100 only account for 4.1 million domains. So pretty much those registrars that are ranked greater than 100, I kind of removed from the list because they were so insignificant in terms of the amount of market share out there. That's not to say that we shouldn't go and review some of those down the road if we choose to, but I guess the point that I'm trying to make is I kind of strayed from the top, middle, and bottom, and I tried to get a better cross-section in the greater areas of market space, and I tried to, and I fudged it a little bit in terms of trying to encompass more countries so that we get a bit kind of a wider spectrum. So that's kind of how I came up with the registrars that are on this list for now. We can certainly add to it or subtract to it. Maybe some of you might know of one or two of these that didn't kind of report very well. Maybe they are true resellers or something, and maybe we should pull them out. We can talk about the details of that later. So that's how I came up with the list of registrars. The second bullet I'd like to talk about. Greg had brought up from a previous to our last session about the categorization of what we're finding across the contracts, or kind of how we laid it out in the spreadsheet. And, you know, he basically said, you know, it's almost TMI, too much information, because, you know, there's only a small segment of it that actually deals with our scope, which is abuse or registration abuse. Much more of what I've been tagging is outside of that span. And so I think, he asked basically, you know, is there a way to hide it or remove it? You know, is it even necessary that we tag it? I still decided to keep the information in there because I think it was really the best gauge of kind of trying to mark the inventory across all of the contracts. I wanted to try to make sure that I was accounting for every section within that contract so that I could say this section didn't look like it had anything to do with abuse, and yes, it was pretty much relating to fees and payment. And so, you know, that's why I got the other tag down at the bottom. So again, just for the most part, I felt it was necessary to kind of just conduct an inventory across all of these contracts to maybe turn over every stone, so to speak. And that's why I'm still keeping it all encompassing. Plus, I think that it also still kind of provides a comprehensive view of how well or how badly, however you choose to view it, that these contracts are at being built out there. Third point I'd like to make, the matrix and the results that you see here up to this point are really an inventory of a specific section within a contract. And so what I want to, I guess the first disclaimer, if you will, and the only way I can think I can describe this is by an example. If in the category of let's say waiver as an example in the other section, or well, because we're registration abuse, let's say in the category of UDRP between GoDaddy and ENOM as an example, both contracts have the flag that they do have UDRP language in their contract. That's as far as this matrix goes right now. There is no comparison being made to the specific language within that UDRP section stating, you know, and I'm not, I guess the point is that I'm not trying to get to that aspect that GoDaddy's UDRP language may be better or more precise and concise at ENOMS. So it's strictly a comparison of does UDRP language exist or does it not. So that's kind of where we're at now. If after or we kind of dive deeper into this analysis, if we need to get to the sentence level and start really dissecting words and structure and that kind of stuff, then that's kind of our next step. Two more bullets and then I'm done. The next to the last bullet is my second disclaimer about what we see here. Oh, I'm sorry, I lied. Three bullets prior to this one. The structure of this spreadsheet is the, you know, there's kind of four sections, if you will, when you're looking at the matrix. The top section is primarily the registrant agreements that are available to us out there. You'll notice across the blue bar that each registrar kind of names them differently, but generally they're, you know, domain registrant agreements or registrar agreements, those kinds of things. But they were they're more or less viewed as the primary document that a registrant would review when they go to sign up for a domain name. What I noticed is that I really needed to add on a couple of more layers. Several of the registrars, some chose to have all of their language in their agreement in one document. Other registrars chose to have it in two, sometimes three documents, either across terms of use, the registrant agreement itself, and maybe some services type of agreement or everything. So I felt it was important to try to cover some of those documents as well. So the first section, like I said, is typically the registrant agreement. The second section is a sister document labeled whatever the registrar chose to, terms of service or some of those things. Then there's a third section basically about terms of use and just the flag is conduct of use. And then the fourth section, again, goes back to our list that the overall working group is working on that has all of the abuse types that we've identified. So the kind of the next disclaimer, if you will, that last section is subject to change as the larger working group refines that list as to what are the abuse types that are within our scope, and we've got the definitions, et cetera. So we'll need to adjust that as we go. Next to last bullet, the big disclaimer here. This is the Barry disclaimer, if you will. And for lack of a better phrase right now, there are several ways to skin a cat, so to speak. So when you're looking at this matrix and kind of working in isolation, if you will, you know, my logic for categorizing what I found in the contracts could differ 180 degrees from how Mikey might choose to classify it, or James, you know, if you tried doing this, there would be, we would probably wind up with three different versions of what we're coming up here. So, you know, I think hopefully you guys are aware that it is a, you know, it's kind of the natural human nature, if you will. Everybody's biased in one degree or another, but you know, my newbie logic, so to speak, tried to assign these particular sections to these certain categories. In some cases, there, you know, it was up for interpretation as to did this part of the contract actually satisfy the category or not. And so, again, my point is, you know, some people might have varying opinions about, well, it should be here or there, and that's something that we'll just have to work through. So to kind of summarize this last disclaimer is when we started off on down this road, we didn't have any kind of picture at all. Our end goal is to have a perfect picture of what current state might look like out there. And I would say that we're, what with what we have right now, we're about 80% of the way there in terms of the clarity of that picture. So that's kind of where that is. My last point, and then I'll shut up for a while, is basically kind of questions that are on the table. And this is for the entire group to discuss and ponder through this call and over the next couple of weeks while we play with this stuff. The first one is, you know, does this exercise tell us anything that we didn't already know? And I think what we need to come up with next or is kind of start to formulate what some of the main takeaways are, you know, what are some of the things that we are seeing from the results of this. Second question is, does the subteam, you know, do we as a subteam actually share this research? And if so, do we sanitize it to make it anonymous, or is it important that, you know, because these are public documents, et cetera, I think the overall work group is kind of itching to see what we're doing. So I'm kind of feeling under the pressure to kind of start sharing some of this. So I just want to make sure we have consensus or agreement about how we go to share this stuff. Next question is kind of moving into the area of how we would approach registrars or the registrar, registry constituencies, et cetera, is, you know, do we take this data, and as an example, I keep picking on GoDaddy because you're on the call, James, but, you know, should we approach the registrar like GoDaddy and say, you know, here's our findings on what we kind of come up here. Would you like to, you know, should we interview GoDaddy, so to speak, and give them an opportunity to help refine the findings? You know, maybe they'll pick up on some areas that they actually did have covered that I didn't show in the work here. You know, kind of the next step is how do we engage the registrar if we do at all? And it's all in that effort of trying to find out, you know, what practices, how effective the practices are out there across the marketplace. Two last questions is, you know, I think the next kind of in the next step category is, you know, do we start to add like the standard RAA agreement to this matrix, and would that help formulate any kind of baseline around some of the abuse language? And then the last question is, do we apply the same technique to the registry contracts as well, and in our effort to, you know, cover our spectrum of possible abuse information out there? So that was a lot of stuff. Probably took about 7 or 8 minutes instead of 5. I'm going to open up the table to questions, concerns, comments, and opinions as to where and what we should do with this. Thank you.
Barry, this is James.
Go for it.
Okay. I just have numerous questions and concerns, and I know Mikey is driving, so...
No, I'm done now. I've landed.
Oh, okay.
So
welcome home.
I even have the spreadsheet open.
Fantastic. Okay. So let me start with the small and work up to the larger. First question is, what is the difference? I get the difference between the binary scale 1 to 0, but what is the difference between 0 and a yellow or pale yellow square? What is that telling me?
Okay. On the title page, I tried to create a small little legend that's probably not very apparent. But it's, so if we're looking at the registrar summary by rank page.
Oh, I see it now. I'm sorry.
Okay, good. All right. So
one is that it's met in that agreement. Zero is met, but it's met somewhere else, and no mention at all is pale yellow.
Correct. So just to refine that example is, for instance, with GoDaddy, the primary domain registration agreement definitely has lots of language around how a registrant is supposed to manage their contact information and who is updates, et cetera. And so within that contract, it got a green, it got a one tag, so it was there. Right below it is conduct and use. I think GoDaddy has a terms of use document that's separate from the registrant agreement. And so that conduct and use category was actually covered in that document below. So up in this section, I needed to try, again, it's kind of back to the inventory component. I wanted to make sure that if I didn't put a zero kind of lighter green flag there, then it would give the impression that GoDaddy wasn't covering conduct and use. So I wanted to just, the idea there is, yes, conduct and use is covered, but it's in a separate document. And then, like you said, James, the yellow section is there was nothing found in any document at all.
Okay. And I think it would be helpful if going over each of these categories here where it says Tier 1, registered and other agreements, and then it's got that kind of light blue where it lists category after
right.
the scope field. If we use the notes function to describe exactly what it is that we are looking for, because, for example, and I'm trying to be as amenable as possible, if you were to say to me that there is no in this agreement or in another agreement, there is no entry in the GoDaddy rainbow of agreements for breach or termination or spam or expiration, I would find that assertion a little hard to believe. So, I just wanted to point that out. So understanding exactly what it is that, what test we're attempting to satisfy with these flags, I think noting that on this sheet will help us in two ways, and I'll get back to that in just a moment. The next thing is, and it's these tabs with the bar graphs, okay? I don't think there's a lot of information around these. They're just total score or ranking a total score. But this is precisely the type of information that I was concerned would be compiled out of this group and could possibly get into the wild, okay? Leaving my own employer out of this for a minute, because, it says right there, GoDaddy compares favorably to Enum, but not favorably to Network Solutions, for example. But suppose this other one down here that only scored a 2 or 3 were to suddenly be hit with an influx of abusive use that they were not prepared to deal with. I think that whether there's any merit to it or not, but they could point to a chart like this and say, hey, you've basically identified us as easy pickings. You've set us up as a target, therefore you're responsible, culpable. I think that you need to be very, very careful about that. I'll say that if we go back and we actually list the tests that we're looking for and we're to phrase it thusly to, you were mentioning steps forward and interviewing the different registrars, one approach might be to say something of the effect of, where in your agreements do you address ERP? Where in your agreements do you address the termination of service, you know, and then list out all of those things, and then let each registrar essentially respond back to that. And see, you know, some of them are going to be all blank because they're not going to respond. But I think that you would see, for example, the larger folks, the dispersion that we were talking about last time, the larger registrars, you know, would close ranks pretty quickly because I'm sure they all have professional legal staff on board and they all fully understand that all of these things need to be covered in one agreement or another, and it may not be readily readily apparent to laymen such as ourselves. And that just brings me to my very last point, which is the Barry disclaimer and the James disclaimer and the Mikey disclaimer, that we would all look at these differently. And I think that that was kind of my concern when we were going into this, that it not grow or morph into a comparative legal analysis. Because that's an exercise that it doesn't help the work of the working group, and it certainly creates a lot of pitfalls for us in doing so. So I think that just to show I'm not the type of person that just sits and pokes holes in ideas, I think that, you know, taking this and then fleshing out each line item in that blue column and then presenting that to the registrars that we've identified here and allowing them to, as you said, refine it or fill in the gaps, you know, it may be disappointing because we may see, you know, that they all now suddenly are full of ones. but we need to give that opportunity. And then I would strongly caution about any release of this material into any public forum with the names and scores and things like that attached, because, like I said, I think that's not a good direction, not a good path to charge off on. So, that's my questions, comments, suggestions. I'll go back on mute now.
Thank you, James.
Okay, this is Mikey. So here's an exercise for you. I've looked at the main chart now at all scales, and I now have it on my screen at the smallest percent magnification, so I can see the whole spreadsheet at once, and I can't read anything. First observation, typical, amazing amount of work, great job. I think incredibly useful. Second point is, you know, are there patterns? And as far as I can see, once you get out of the top four, there's really no pattern. And since our charge as a group is to talk about uniformity of contracts, I agree with James that we should scrub the identities because the identities aren't terribly relevant to the analysis that we're charged with doing. And I agree that getting this out in the wild would be trouble, so I'll second that. But if you look at this, what's really interesting is that there is a lot of dispersion. Actually quite a bit more than I was expecting. And at least from my 25% magnification bird's eye view, that means that we do have... let me come at it the other way. Let's say that the top 8 or 9 lines, the ones that are really relevant to the working group, were all green. Then I think what we would have is sort of a non-starter. We'd go back to the group and we would say, well, there seems to be huge uniformity of contracts. So our charge is complete. We've discovered that the contracts are all pretty uniform, and end of story. But I think that what you've done here, Barry, and I agree with James, too, that we should give at least the 15 registrars a chance to take a look at this and tidy it up. But let's presume that it stays more or less the way it is. Maybe some changes. Maybe a few come in with more green. Then what we've got is that our charter with uniformity of contracts still has some validity. There is dispersion. That's what we set out to prove as quickly as we could. And so, you know, sort of then my next observation is, does the pattern change as we go from larger ones to smaller ones? And again, if we throw out the top four sort of outliers, there doesn't seem to be any pattern. Some small ones that have pretty extensive coverage and some small and larger ones that don't have any. So they're at least the size segmentation doesn't seem to be the thing that flushes a pattern out, which enchants me. That's quite interesting.
Just real quick, to me, the biggest pattern was the by-country matrix, and especially when you kind of look at the summary by country, just the actual blue graph.
Oh, yeah, or even just the little... Yeah, I get that. You know, I do tend to see more in the North American...
But that does, I guess the caveat there is that takes a look at the entire contract in terms of all categories. That for our purposes here, we're only concerned with registration of views. So, you know, that graph would probably definitely look a lot different.
Yeah, you're right. So, I guess, you know, in terms of next steps of this analysis, my immediate thought, subject to all the usual James and Barry caveats, would be that we've driven this far enough to do two things. One, scrub off the names. Two, maybe thin it out so that it doesn't have all of the non-RAA stuff. Three, take it back to the registrars and let them, you know, identify which column they are and let them correct them to the extent that they need to be.
Yeah, I guess that's certainly a question that I have. You know, if we're going to keep this anonymous from this point forward, you know, does it really beg the question of actually going to the registrars to flush it out in more detail? Like I said, we're about an 80% clarity on the picture.
Yeah.
To get that extra 20%, does it really warrant the time of going to a registrar? And because again, you know, I mean,
absolutely, Barry. This is James. Absolutely. I mean, I'm right away looking at the column for the company that I'm most closely familiar with, and you know, it absolutely must be sent to the registrars for correction. Yeah.
And you know, I think that if you could figure out a way through the magic of Excel to make it A, pretty easy for them to fill it in, and B, easy for you to consolidate. If you get stuck on that, you and I could do that one offline, because it would seem to me that there should be a way that you could give this to them and they could, you know, fix their column and mail it back, and then you can merge them pretty easily. So
If this is anonymous and all we're really trying to answer here is there dispersion across contracts or not? You know, like you mentioned, James, we answered that. It does look like there is.
I think it would be possibly premature to draw that conclusion without having giving folks an opportunity to clean that up. I mean, as I mentioned, I think that if you sent to GoDaddy Enom 2000 Network Solutions of Melbourne IT, you would see, shockingly, that dispersion would evaporate.
And I think that's worth the trouble.
I think that those columns would all line up green, top to bottom, in lockstep. Can I pick on Margie for just a second? Is she still on the call?
No, she actually had to drop off.
Oh, no, because, I mean, not only is she a lawyer, but she was also chief counsel for a registrar.
But I'm happy to take the question back, or, I mean, you can write it.
I would have asked her to channel her previous position and, maybe weigh in on that, because the type of person that we would be wanting to submit these to, Barry, it was actually now working for ICANN, and Margie. But I do feel very strongly that this may, at this point, and I think what it comes down to is I'm questioning the 80%. I think we're, 50-60% of a picture, and that we still need another 20-30% to go forward. And the other question I would like to pose to Margie, so maybe Marika, this is more appropriate, is this idea of uniformity, and are we driving towards a uniform registration agreement? Because I know that there are required elements, for example, in the RAA that we have to pass through to registrants. So does it then become a question of the most appropriate comparison or a measurement of uniformity versus dispersion is to say, who is doing that and who isn't, and then does that also overlap a little bit with compliance efforts? So, again, I'm not trying to disparage the work, the effort, and the research that's going into this, but I think that I find some very troubling elements of what we're looking at here, and I'm very concerned that either the working group or this subgroup or even just in general, if this were to get out of the wild, that people would go charging off with this information, and I don't feel that it's actionable at this point. Where one could draw any conclusions from it at this point. So, again, I just want to put those concerns out there.
Okay. And I'd like to ask one more question relative to, the consistency across contracts that we do see here. So, as for an example, UDRP, the very first section, across all of the ones that I've tagged so far, there are only 5 out of the 21 or 22 that didn't seem to have any kind of UDRP language in their primary contract. That's not to say that they don't have a link to the ICANN site or that it may be in a separate agreement or a separate document. I guess, and probably UDRP is not a good one to use. Let's go as an example. We're talking about cyber squatting, and that's one of our identified abuse types. A lot of the contracts, actually, virtually everyone that I reviewed through, not one of them specifically mentioned cyber squatting. And what you'll see down at the bottom is that I still have the cyber squatting field tagged because most of those contracts or agreements did have language in there that you can't infringe on trademarks or third-party rights and that kind of stuff. So that type of language is predominantly consistent across all of the registrant agreements. And so we look at all the domains that are registered out there. Now let's ask, how effective is that consistent uniform language, so to speak, mitigating cyber squatting? And I think the answer is probably very minimal, at all, if at all. So then that asks the next question, which kind of ties back to one of your previous questions, is, James, is uniformity even the best thing here? Is, you know, if we did come up with a recommendation that fishing and farming and these other kinds of components should be a part of the contract and help increase the uniformity, will that necessarily help with the effectiveness of combating it? Did that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does in terms of, like, for example, you know, one of the criticisms about agriculture is that, you know, there's one hybrid now that's 90%+ of all the corn grown in Iowa, let's say. And so if there's any kind of a disease that's going to attack, it's going to find a much easier path because there's so much uniformity in the, there's no diversity of that. And I think
right.
that when you are talking about registrars and registrants that are existing in all forms of regions, geographic regions, and national and international jurisdictions, you know, uniformity becomes maybe less desirable and maybe also an illusion of something that can never be achieved. So I think that it is. Worth noting uniformity. It's not, you know, self-evident that uniformity is a desirable thing to be pursuing. Another example is, you know, for example, on this list there's GoDaddy and there's Two Cows. Completely different business models. Okay, Two Cows has a network of tens of thousands of resellers, and GoDaddy has millions of direct customers. So, you know, who are you writing this agreement? Who is the intended recipient or entering party into this agreement? What sort of agreement are they looking for? And do you use a lot of business-oriented language or do you use a lot of consumer-oriented language? So I think that, there's just I understand that this exercise is in our charter. I understand that we've gone through a lot of trouble. Barry, has gone through a lot of trouble and put a lot of time and effort into this, and it is visually and very well organized. But, again, just very, very hesitant about where we go from here, how we clean this up, and then even then, what we do with that information. And I would even hold out that, for example, on one of the charts we have summary by country. Am I on the right? We have North America, Europe, and Asia Pacific, so summary by region, I guess. And North America is much more, much higher scores and much more uniform. Well, I'd also say that that's probably, you know, how much of that can be attributed to the fact that we live in a more litigious society and we live in possibly one of the more litigious industries in a litigious society. So let's be mindful of that when we start putting together scoreboards like this.
So this is Mikey again. I'm trying to figure out how to move this forward. And it seems to me that there are a couple of things we could do. One, we could summarize this at a much higher level for the working group. Oh, not forward the spreadsheet.
I guess to that, there are capabilities on here that you can filter out by tags, so we could just only have the RAP tagged type thing showing and remove all the others and the PEDNR to close it up. And then in terms of actual display. You know, I can take screen captures after we like remove all the names, make it anonymous, then I can screen capture the visualness and put it into a PDF or presentation or whatever so that we can just give them a visual idea across the categories, you know, of these registration abuse categories, across these X number of registrars, you know, this is what we kind of found, and give them the visual, and then that way it's super sanitized and it doesn't, but I don't know how helpful.
Well, I was thinking even one level higher. And I guess it seems like there are a couple of parallel tracks. One, I'm sympathetic to James's point that it would be a really bad idea to get an inaccurate version of this out in the wild, and it may even be a bad idea to have an accurate version of this out in the wild for different reasons. And so rather than running the risk of it ever getting out in the wild, just summarize the first round conclusions, which are subject to lots of caveats. Like, first round conclusion looks pretty dispersed, but this is prior to firming with registrars, and it's in terms of confirming with registrars. Maybe we could just recruit a couple, three friendly ones like GoDaddy and, Newman and somebody, a few more, just to do a sanity check on this to make sure that it's, at least close to right. And if the sanity check comes back, yeah, pretty good, nope, we don't have any language about blah, blah, blah in there. Again, we still wouldn't teeter on the edge of releasing this piece of research just yet. But that would let the working group know that there is, at least at the first pass, because remember, that's what we were trying to do. We were trying to do a fast pass, a non-exhaustive pass, to determine whether there was an issue at all. And if, to James's point about uniformity and hybridization, which is a great analogy, I love that, being a farmer myself, I think that there's the difference between uniformity and the meeting of minimum thresholds.
Exactly, Michael.
I don't think that we want uniformity for all those reasons you described, James, but I think it's safe to say that we do want some sort of minimums out there.
Yes, can I jump in on just a second on that point, Mikey?
Sure, go ahead.
You are absolutely 100% correct. You want to minimum threshold, and you want to ensure that they're all being met. And those are, I believe, why I wish Margie were on the call, those minimum components are required as part of the RAA, and if they're not being delivered, Barry and Mikey, then rather than calling those folks out, what we need to be doing is we need to be turning them over to ICANN compliance and saying, I'm getting some letters out from Stacey Burnett's group that they're not upholding those provisions of their accreditation contract. So.
Well, and the one caveat I'd add to that is that we may have more topics in this matrix.
Okay.
From the abuse standing than the minimums that are already called out in the RIA.
Okay, I agree with you. And that's the flip side of that that formula, which then says, is this an expansion of that that minimum portfolio?
Could be. And
and if it is, then to getting that, do you see where I'm going with this, Mikey? It's like it either matches with our minimum requirements.
Right.
Or it's saying you don't have enough pieces of flair, even though you're wearing 10 or whatever, and the minimum is 5, and it's like, well, wait a second here, what is the minimum? Are we pushing the minimum up?
Yes, and I think that may be the crux of the policy issue, which is as we fleshed out that list, the 7 or 8 yellow eggs on the far left, and then we applied that list of abuse types to the contract, what we may have done is discovered that some of the contracts already have language about that because they've exceeded the RAA.
Right.
And others don't. And, you know, so then the next kind of question is, well, to what extent does that exist? And the answer from this very first test is, well, it's pretty diverse. There are some that, you know, it's sort of all over the map. It's not like what I was sort of looking for when we originally sort of launched this and launched Barry down this rabbit hole was that if there had been sort of green stripes across this spreadsheet where everybody had language about a given abuse type and other stripes where nobody did, then I probably would have said, ah, there's uniformity, and there are areas that aren't being addressed. And that's a different conclusion than what we are seeing, at least, you know, caveat, lots of foam on the runway, what we're seeing in this analysis, which says, huh, it's kind of all over the map. That's, I think, maybe all we need to take back at this stage to the working group is to say, there's a lot of variability in there. We are going to tighten this up. We may never release this detailed report because I think you raised some valid points, but this was an exercise that Barry was doing for his own edification and understanding, and great work. We are confirming some of this stuff, but we've got some puzzlers for the working group. One of the puzzlers is this one of the extent to which the current minimums are sufficient to cover the abuse types that we've got. Another puzzler is sort of your hybrid issue, which is the question of whether it's a good idea to drive uniform language into contracts or whether it's a better idea to drive minimums, and if so, which one?
Hi, this is Margie. I just dialed back in.
Oh, cool.
Oh, hi, Margie.
Hi, sorry, I had an emergency with my head of the car.
Well, we've got puzzlers for you. How long have you been back on the call?
I just dialed back in.
Okay.
I did dabber Margie with a little bit of the background already, but you might just want to recap what you want from her so she has some time to think.
Yeah, James, you hit it. This is
well, Margie, we kind of wanted to pick on you, or I did. I shouldn't say we. Kind of wanted to pick on you a little bit, both in your position, your current position as a, in your senior policy role at GoDaddy or at ICANN, but also in your previous role as the counsel for a registrar. And, some of the concerns, and I don't know if you've had a chance to open the spreadsheet that we're discussing, but, we're really wrestling with some existential issues here. First off, is we didn't want this to turn into a comparative legal analysis because I believe that given the opportunity, legal representation for each registrar would claim, whether they're correct or not, that they meet all the criteria. The second thing is whether it is this larger question of whether uniformity is, desired in all situations for all business models and all regions, et cetera, and whether or not that is driving towards some sort of a uniform cookie-cutter registration agreement that contains, equivalent or identical language. And then Mikey brought very, very astutely brought up that rather than doing that, that we should have minimums, which I believe are there are some several minimum components of the RAA stipulates have to be present in a registration agreement. And then that only raises further questions about whether this exercises a tacit call to expand those minimums. So we're wrestling with a lot of questions here, and I think we're all starting to trace into areas that could benefit from your experience.
Whoa, put me on the spot here.
Yeah, we weren't kidding when we said we were going to pick on you.
Well, there's certainly different business models and different contracts that are used on the registrar side, depending upon the kind of customers that they're trying to deal with. So there's certainly truth to that. I think there's, you know, as we do it with the RAA already, there are certain provisions that I can, you know, requires to be included in the contracts, but that ICANN doesn't clarify what is every provision that has to be in the contract. And so from a uniformity of contracts perspective, it seems like it would be maybe less problematic to just have you know, you should have an abuse clause that covers, you know, or, you know, covers this subject, and you don't necessarily have to dictate exactly what it says. I mean, that's one approach that could be taken, and that would allow the various registrars to, you know, go back to the legal counsel and make sure they're complying with local laws and all of that. Or you could go more specific, as we do in the RAA. I mean, there's a broad spectrum of approaches. I think it's not unreasonable to try to come out with a more medium approach. You know, like you should, you know, consider an, you know, acceptable use policy that deals with these issues and leave it to the registrars to define. I mean, at least that's what I would have said as on the, you know, as someone who was working for a registrar at that point. I did see some other questions about like compliance related issues or having a summary of all the contract terms. I think one way to avoid having this look like a compliance effort is to just focus on the provisions that deal with abuse and not with the other provisions, because, you know, by narrowing what a summary like this does, you won't be highlighting things that the registrars won't, you know, or that it's not intended to be highlighted at this point, because this isn't meant to be a compliance effort in any, you know, means. It's really trying to be a useful tool that we can use to develop what, you know, thoughts on whether there should be a uniform approach on contracts. So, you know, so there might be, it might be more appropriate to have a thinner version of this document that doesn't have so much information that's not relevant to the topic at hand. Does that seem to be answering some of the questions?
I think that's good. I mean, what, you know, suppose, I don't know if there is or not. I can scroll all the way over, but I don't think Mark Monitor is listed on this sheet. But suppose you were in your old position and this were, you know, this were to come across your desk. You know, how would you see this as informing the policymaking at ICANN? Are we driving towards some sort of, you know, I guess what I'm wrestling with is, are we driving towards some uniformity in all cases? If the answer is no, then we need to go with Mikey's very abbreviated or a synopsis or a report. If the answer is yes, then I think that opens a lot larger and new, more numerous questions about, you know, why, how, and you know, what are we looking to gain from doing that?
This is Mikey. Let me jump back in. It seems to me that the way we started was, we said, you know, the sort of chartering question is, would uniformity of contracts as they address abuse be a useful thing? And then we said, we don't know whether they're uniform. If they're all uniform, then we have a no-op. we have a non-issue. So then Barry volunteered to find out and has come back with, you know, lots of caveats. Pretty good documentation that not so uniform. I think that's the point at which we stop with this kind of analysis and then say, okay, now that we know that we don't have total uniformity, what are we going to do?
And I'll back up from that, Mike, and say, what are we going to do before that? Is that a problem?
Right. No, I think that's... But I think we now know that the first question that we asked Barry was, are these contracts uniform? If they are, then we're done. I think Barry's come back with good work that says, no, they're not uniform. Okay, what do we do?
And I'm not fully on board with that yet until we've had a chance to present these to the registrars and allow them to correct some of the gaps that we believe we've identified.
Yeah, although I would think, I mean, I haven't dug through all these the way Barry has, but I would be willing to bet that if there's no mention of UDRP in a contract, that it's not going to magically appear. Margie, what's your reaction?
No, they could call it something else, for example, Mikey. They could say, you're bound by all ICANN consensus policies. There you go. You know?
Margie, what do you think?
I guess I'm trying to understand the purpose for having such breadth of information for the purposes of our working group here. Coming from the registrar side, as prior to my involvement with ICANN, I know that the registrars would be concerned if this turned out to be, would morph into a compliance effort, because that's not what the intent of this group is.
Yeah, we're all on board with that.
But on the other hand, there is value, I mean, with the work that's been done here, and maybe there's ways to do it in an anonymous type of way so that the information can get displayed, at least the information that's relevant for our purposes, and yet not point a finger to a particular registrar. So you could have it be, you know, registrar A, registrar B, you know, you could identify them that way as opposed to, you know, Enom or GoDaddy or whoever. So it's more an educational, examination. And I guess the question is it really, what's the value of getting the registrars to confirm this? If the information's been gathered from what's you know, publicly available, and I assume that's how this was put together, is there a need to verify? Because all we're really trying to do is identify what the standard is now and whether there should be, a little bit more uniformity in the contract language. So we may not need to go through the exercise of verifying it because it may not, you know, really help our analysis.
This is James, and I think that I'll answer that question with a question. Margie, you're familiar with our general counselor and our legal team, and as this document indicates, to imply that they have constructed legal agreements that are missing some of these key elements that have these, you know, pretty substantial omissions in them, I think is laughable. I'll just say it that way. It may not be easy to find. They may not be, labeled or identified as that, specifically the term that we were looking for, but I would not be able to sleep at night if I didn't know some of these things were in there.
Well, you know, I'm a former ISP, so I'm not speaking from the same set of contracts, but you know, a big one like GoDaddy or MarkMonitor, you know, where you've got a full-time professional legal staff available, you would be amazed when you get down into a little company where the lawyer costs you big money, $200 an hour, and you don't use them much because you don't have that money. So you generally go to somebody else's contract and kind of steal that and write your own. I could easily imagine that as you get off of the very large, very professional registrars, that in fact there's a fair amount of dispersion in these contracts.
And Mikey, I wanted to mention before that I agree with you. If you wanted to say that there was not a lot of uniformity once you got out of the very large providers, I think that, you know, there's probably a lot of evidence in this graph to indicate that. But I'm just purely putting my blinders on and going right down the GoDaddy column. And, for example, the very first one, you know, to say that nowhere in our domain registration agreement or universal terms of service that we don't have the ability to address or take action when we encounter spam is silly. I mean,
well,
we do
James,
it hundreds of times a day. It could be called bulk email. It could be called email abuse systems or unsolicited emails or something like that. But you know, I assure you it's there.
James, that's not the intent of what I'm trying to do here. It, you know, for instance, so you're going down your column and spam cell whatever it is empty. So in that primary agreement, what GoDaddy labels as domain registration agreement, you know, I even searched for spam as the word itself, and it wasn't found in that document. That doesn't mean that there isn't language in there that still allows GoDaddy to fight spam. I just didn't find a formalized section that in fact, there's only one registrar out there out of this group that actually lists spamming as a formalized section in their contract.
Yeah, and I can certainly kind of clarify as a former, you know, counsel for a registrar and a contract lawyer for many years that it's a lot of it's drafting style. Some lawyers like to be really specific because they feel that if it's not, you know, actually mentioned in their contract, then they, you know, they have a hard time, you know, doing whatever the action is. Then there's other philosophies on contracts saying, no, you don't want to be that specific because what happens if you leave something out? And so the other philosophy is you say we have the right to suspend or, you know, take action, you know, upon evidence of illegal activity or, you know, something, some general statement to that effect. And so a lot of what you're seeing is differences in contract style versus, you know, policy within the company that they don't take action when they are faced with a spam complaint, for example. If we were to categorize the general statements, and then spam and malware and phishing and all that other stuff are subparts of illegal activity, for example. You know, maybe that's more useful to the group. And I don't know, James, if that makes any sense what I just said. But you know, it would surprise me if some of the large registrars don't have some sort of language that gives them the broad-reaching right to take action when faced with illegal activity.
Yeah, and I agree, Margie, and some of these may just come down to just styling or categorization. And by the way, I did pull up our Universal Terms of Service, did a search, and Section 5 says, if you are using these services as determined by GoDaddy in its sole discretion in association with spam or morally objectionable activities, you cancel your service. It says right there. So right away, I think at a minimum, Barry, that cell should go from pale yellow to light green. And you know what I mean?
That was your Universal Terms of Service, but is that your registrant agreement. So that whole top section is specifically your registrant agreement.
Right, and the green flag indicates that it is not present in the registration agreement, but it's present in the other terms of service, correct?
Right.
So that yellow square that says no response should at least say present in another agreement, at a minimum.
Now, let me...
So that's why I'm saying, you know, this needs to then go back to at least when we're talking about the your top five in terms of market share. It needs to go back to the councils of those registrars. I guess we can't go forward with it the way it is, in my opinion, because I see a lot of holes that I know. I just maybe I'm living in a dream world, but I know that the top five registrars would not have some of these holes in their language or in their terms.
So James, you're suggesting because the councils of the registrars obviously know their agreement and know how they interpret it, and maybe they interpret it with a combination of the registrant agreement and terms of use or acceptable use policy, whatever they happen to do in their particular company. But that's what the exercise would be. It would be useful to go back to them and say, would you like, at least give them the opportunity to clarify.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to say, for example, what part of your agreement governs, spam? What part of your agreement governs or tells registrants that they're, subject to the UDRP? And let them, if they can, fill in these gaps.
I
we don't have to do that for all of them. If we want to say that there's a uniformity in the, top five and then it drops off quite a bit after that, I'm certainly not going to belabor that point. But I believe that given that type of an opportunity, that the top five will close ranks and you will see that, the gaps start to shrink and disappear.
This is
Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
I kind of like that idea. I kind of like the idea of, this is kind of like a systems design project where you tell the designer to do one thing and he does it, and then when he does it, you go, oh, no, that's not what I meant. I mean, what we really started Barry off on this was to sort of take a quick scan across a pretty broad set of folks to see if there was uniformity. And we didn't specify method, so he used the method. We're changing the method a little bit. I don't think that's bad. And it would be very useful if at least a few of the top five registrars, legal counsels, could quickly scream through this and fill in those gaps so that we could see whether they do close ranks. So it seems like that's something we could all support. Barry, are you okay with that notion as a to-do for next round?
I'm up for anything. Lead the messenger here.
Well, and I think I think that's something we should look at before we pronounce there is no uniformity.
Yeah,
we might qualify that even further and say, well, there is no uniformity once you get to this region or this type of business model or this type of or this size of registrar. I think you might see uniformity within some of those subcategories.
Yeah, it's. I'm sort of trying to figure out where to go next.
I have a suggestion just looking through the categories of agreement clauses. It strikes me, that some of the things that you've marked as other are things that, like if we're going to go through this exercise, legal departments are generally pretty busy and they're not going to want to answer all of this for, for 40 or 50 topics. But, the ones that as a group you identify to be related to registration abuse, that might be easier to,
Right.
Whether your contract covers these top, 10 items or 15 items, as opposed to whether they have a waiver clause some of the other.
I guess I was sort of presuming that, we wouldn't hand them this whole list. We'd say, here are the, here's the list that we'd like you to check on, and they're all related to registration abuse. But right, not go through their whole, because cripes, that'd be a boatload of work too. I'm sort of trying to avoid the boatload of work problem. at the
same
time.
And I'm looking at it from the perspective of we really do want to get, you know, information that's helpful to us, so the easier we make it to get that information, the better, you know, by narrowing what we really need.
Right. Now, there's a...
Right, and I wanted to just say my agenda here is to make sure that if we're going to do anything, we do it with as complete and thorough and comprehensive as data as possible, whether that means pronouncing that, you know, we have uniformity or not, and also making sure that we are very, 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 very careful not to traipse into areas where we're making comparisons or judgment decisions about, you know, X being better than Y, or pointing out that a certain small registrar off in some far corner of the globe is easy targets because they have nothing governing their abuse in their agreement. So that's my goal here.
Yeah. See, the tricky bit is that we've got sort of conflicting goals going, and trying to think how we.
Well, that's not true, Mikey. I said in addition to your goal. And Mark,
no. What I worry is that we dig in too deep, that we get too many people digging too deep on something that what we were really trying to do was sort of a first pass. Let me come at this another way. What if we tabled this for the moment, and made the following premise. Let's presume that, aside from the top five, there is a fair degree of dispersion amongst the contracts of the registrars. And then maybe spend our next session sketching out what we would do if that was true, to get into all the issues that, you know, we were talking about a little bit earlier on the call, like the minimums, absolutely uniform contracts, changes to the RAA, all that kind of stuff. Because what if we went through all that and we decided not to act at all? Then we would have run all these people through all this work, all these, you know, not to mention Barry, who's already gone through a whole boatload of work. But we would now run a whole bunch of registrars, general counsel, through a whole bunch of work, when in fact we then at the end said, well, we're not going to do anything. It's, you know, I guess that's sort of, let me try and restate that. If this had come back solid green, then I would have said, we're done. We have uniform contracts, and we don't have an issue. If it had come back solid yellow and you had agreed, James, then I would have said, wow, we've really got an issue. We're in a gray area, and one approach to the gray area is to delve a lot deeper in the research, but maybe before we do all that research, we want to do some of the sort of preliminary policy thinking to see whether that research is warranted. I don't know if I'm saying that clearly or not.
No, I get that entirely, Mikey. I guess my opinion is that, and I agree with you, I don't want to spin up a legal counsel at a lot of different registrars if it's ultimately not going to go in any direction. I think the only thing worse than that would be not giving them the opportunity to fill in these gaps and then going off and using an incomplete picture to inform policy development. I think that would probably be the only thing that they would be less preferable than.
Oh yeah, no, I agree that if we got to that point, we'd have to amp this up one level.
But I do believe, going back to what you originally said, I do believe that this, at least in the top 4, 5, 6, 10 registrars, that it is solid green, or solid green and pale green. But the yellows, I think, would, as I said, evaporate given the chance to vet this by their counsel.
Listen, Rick, I have a question because, you know, I think James, you mentioned, I think Margie mentioned as well that they'll probably find that even though, you know, most registrars might mention all the different abuse categories or in which case they'll take down, but they'll have a more broader, you know, provision which says, you know, we have the authority to take down if you feel, you know, you're doing something that's wrong. Isn't the real question on the line that when are they actually enforcing that? And, you know, I think it's a question, I'm not really sure if there's an answer to it because I'm not really sure how you can find out in, you know, how the registrar actually applies that and, you know, in which cases it will enforce that provision and in which cases it doesn't. But isn't that the real question we're trying to or trying to find out?
Well, I think so. This is James. I think so, but I think that, that's where we start to step into the step over the fence into a compliance and effectiveness measurement. So.
This is Mikey. I actually don't think we are. I think that really what we're chartered with is prior to compliance, the question is, A, are the contracts uniform, and B, if they were uniform, would that help address abuse? Now, at some point, you then get into, Marika, your point. If they have contractual underpinnings, how are they doing the compliance? But I see the enforcement compliance action part is outside the scope of this group.
But one of the questions is if you don't know how provisions are actually being implemented, you know, it's very nice and that everyone has the same provision, but if it means that everyone is doing something differently, if, you know, one registrar doesn't do anything with spam only when it's, I don't know, phishing or, you know, something else, then uniformity doesn't mean anything.
Well,
you still don't know in which case it is being used or not.
You know, that's a good point, Marika. You know, I think that we have a couple of different things here. Uniformity of contract language, uniformity of application, and, you know, I think we're even getting into a situation here. For example, if GoDaddy has a registration agreement, and GoDaddy has a web hosting agreement, and we think someone is being a bad guy, but we can't find the appropriate provision to apply in a registration agreement, we'll just pull their hosting because we know that we control that, and it's much more broadly written. So I think, you know, would another registrar hide behind that difference, or would they also use it to their advantage to correcting the problem? And I think that now we're getting into an area where I don't know if we can discern those different approaches or postures towards abuse just by looking at language and contract or
right.
Or even compliance issues.
Yeah, because I think that the, you know, let's presume that the top five have uniform contracts. You know, that's about the extent to which this subgroup can go. Then there's a whole other question which you raised, Marika, which I think is certainly a valid question, which is to what extent do each of the registrars actually enforce their contracts?
Or even if it's not in a contract at all. So phishing as an example, there are very few contracts that I've searched through or terms of use or anything where anybody specifically called out phishing. You know, so even if you don't call it specifically out in your contract, you know, and whether you have general language that allows you to fight that abuse or not, the fact is that the abuse still goes on. You know, What is it that the marketplace is doing out there to still try to combat it? You know, we can legalese this to death and try to put every form of abuse into a contract and try to fight it, but the fact is it still goes on. So, you know, it ties back to the effectiveness question, right?
Right, right. And then if presented with an incident of phishing that a registrar doesn't have specifically called out in their contract, would they take another tack, like, well, you're pointed at this hosting account, so I'm going to yank your hosting agreement. Or you precipitated the fish with your email account, so I'm going to yank your email account. You know what I mean? There's other ways to, other angles of attack that can be taken to address a single problem, even if it's not called out by name in the agreement.
This is my
and we can see the failure of it today. I'll just kind of repeat the point that I made earlier is, practically every contract, whether it's in the registrant agreement or a terms of use or universal, there's some sort of language that says you will not impede on trademarks, you will not infringe on anybody's right, but that's one of the main abuses that still goes on out there today. And so what good does it do us that we all have uniformity about trademark other than legal protection? If we're in a lawsuit situation, it still doesn't necessarily combat the issue. The only way we have to combat it is if the person being infringed on stumbles across it and then they follow UDRP or they go get their own legal assistance to fight the abuser directly. But, you know, regardless of whether it was in a contract or not, it still goes on and we still try to fight it.
So this is Mikey. I've got another approach. Also, I need to know, how long is this call supposed to go?
It's supposed to end 24 minutes ago.
Okay. Let me offer another approach. Margie touched on this, and I'm not going to use quite the right words, so Margie, don't wince when I use these words. They're not your words. They're my words. But rather than, you know, I was just thinking that what would be cool, if I were a registrar, sort of a little registrar like my little ISP, what would be neat is the following document. Dear Mike, abuse is a big problem, as you know, and so here are some kinds of language that you ought to have in your contract, or you at least ought to have a mechanism to address the following kinds of abuse, blah, 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 blah. And here are several ways you could do it. You could either put the following kinds of general language in your contracts, or you could use these other kinds of language in your contracts, and the strategies that you could use to fight it could be pulling their account, some of the things, James, that you were rattling off. But in a sense, sort of define this as a project to define best practices rather than getting it right down to the jiffies as to whether the language is the same in each contract, but rather providing a minimum toolkit for a registrar when they're building their agreement so that they have the tools they need to enforce and to act. And then a subsequent discussion is and I'm not sure it's this working, this subgroup, is Marika's point, which is then to what extent are the registrars actually doing anything about it? But if we just stopped at that sort of litany of best practices and said, here are useful clauses that should be addressed in your contract somehow, and approach it that way. Is that a way out of this?
Mikey, I think that's a great idea. And in fact, I would even stop just a little bit shorter and not enumerate the different things that we want to see or actions that we want to take, but just put it in the form of an open-ended question and see what they come back with. Which part of your agreement addresses this issue, this type of abuse?
Oh.
And what are your options for remedying it? And then just kind of, because they may come back with stuff that, I mean, I'm the only registrar on this group, and I know that I certainly, you know, if GoDaddy, as large as they are, is probably not representative of the entire universe of what could be done.
Yeah.
But let's leave it a little more open-ended and let folks come back. And then I would also recommend, in parallel to doing that, we could go back to the group
as a whole and say something to the effect of, you know, Barry has put some exhaustive research and data collection into this issue, did a great job. We've had some lengthy and contentious discussions and, you know, rock, paper, scissors and all that stuff.
I want to disagree with that contentious comment.
Okay, well, we've had some very vibrant and interesting discussions / thumb wrestling on the teleconferences, and we've got some open questions that we'd like to continue to flesh out, such as the uniformity in the top X number of registrars, you know, whether that exists or not, you know, whether or not business models and what some of the other folks are saying and doing out there, but for the moment, let's just say with some degree of confidence that when you're getting into, when you're getting off the beaten path with, you know, the large registrars with a professional full-time legal department, that there is a lot of dispersion. Now what do we do about it? Or is that bad? Or, you know,
yeah,
I would be fine with something like that.
Yeah, and I don't think we need to be perfect when we go back to the working group. We can just say, wow, we're busy. Don't bug us right now. We need a couple of more meetings before we can come back to you and report.
Yeah.
You know, because I think we are. I think we're actually digging into some pretty fertile, productive territory here. And that maybe our topic for next time, I'm going to have to drop off in 1 minute, by the way.
Yeah, same here.
Is, you know, let's pick this up and figure out sort of where we want to go. And let's not give the working group as a whole an exhaustive report of where we're at. We'll just say, yikes, we're deep in it. We'll be back to you and leave it at that.
That sounds good. You know, once again, just as long as we don't hand them this spreadsheet.
Yeah, I think the spreadsheet, yeah, I agree with James on this. This spreadsheet,
this is a hand grenade right now, and I'm trying to be nice about that. This.
Yeah, I think we do have to be careful on this spreadsheet. I agree with that. Barry, you are a prince. You have done a fabulous job. You've been beat up roundly for an hour and a half, and you need to know that it's not you. It's your work has triggered probably one of the most productive policy discussions that I've been on in quite a while. And so you should know that your work is deeply appreciated, even though it's not done.
Yeah, and Barry, I'd like to echo that. And as Mikey and Margie and Marika will tell you, that although on this particular subgroup I may sound like a bit crotchety, that I'm probably one of the nicest guys you could meet in ICANN. So I think it's great work.
Not this grouchy. I don't know what you've done to him, Barry.
I knew that, James. So no worries at all. Like I said, I want to make sure we're doing the right thing for, you know, at the right time, and try to please as many as we can.
Well, and I think that, you know, you've done a stellar work here, and certainly recognize the time and effort and thought and organization that went into it. I'm just very leery of going back to, I know that, you know, some of these groups, and I know registrars especially.
I got to scoot. My 330
okay.
Just walked in. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. I know registrars in particular can be a pack of ravenous wolves, and I would hate to... I think the spreadsheet would be like walking into that room wearing a T-bone sweater. So I just would not want to be wearing that sweater. So
good deal. All right. Well, I'll update Greg briefly before our next session, and we'll just move forward with that. You know, we're head down working. We'll get back to you soon.
Okay. When are we meeting again? Is it next week or the week following?
It'll be 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
Same time?
It's roughly the same time. I'm going to send out a doodle again just in case we need to modify by an hour or something, but roughly the same time.
No problem.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea because you know, Mikey and I are probably within 100 miles of each other, 200 miles, and I know Margie's in the States as well, but I think it's just Marika and Gisela that have to burn the midnight oil a little bit. So.
All right. Okay, well, thank you, everyone, and we'll talk again on Monday.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Betty.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, operator. Thank you, Denise. Sorry.
You're welcome. I'll get the recording edited in just a few moments for you.
Lovely. So it will probably be ready in about an hour, wouldn't it?
It'll be about an hour, yes.
Lovely. Thank you, Denise, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.